Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
I'm Hillary Kerr, and this is Second Life, a podcast spotlighting women who have truly inspiring careers. We're talking about their work journeys, what they've learned from the process of setting aside their doubts or fears, and what happens when they embark on their second life. Today, it is my great honor to have the amazing Cindy Ramirez-Fulton on this podcast. She is the co-founder and CEO of the most incredible place in New York called Chill House, which is a manicure, massage, cafe mashup that's pretty much everything you want in self-care. It's doing a tremendous business right now and is beloved by celebrities and influencers alike. But of course, Cindy's career didn't quite start out this way. While she's always had an entrepreneurial spirit, before Cindy ran her own next-generation self-care hotspot, she worked in the fashion and tech space. I'm so excited to talk to her about making the leap. Now, on Second Life, it's Cindy Ramirez-Fulton. On this pod, I always like to start at the beginning. So What did you study in school, and what did you think you wanted to be when you grew up?
So I went to school for fashion marketing. I think my mom, like, we grew up shopping a lot together. So I was definitely a bit of a fashion girl growing up. But I wasn't really sure if that was the direction I was going to take for the rest of my life. Additionally, when I was a teenager, I was an actor and a model. So that kind of ended up going into my 20s. I did a lot of that while also bartending and X, Y, and Z. But I went to LIM for fashion marketing. And I dropped out twice.
Okay, so first of all, what exactly is fashion marketing?
It's just anything from PR to digital marketing. I mean, back in the day, I'm 33 now, so when I went to school, it was like 2003, 2004. There wasn't social media back then, right? So it was mostly like, I guess I was trying to learn a little bit about how to market in
fashion. In the fashion space.
Fashion space.
And you dropped out twice.
I dropped out twice.
Tell me about that.
So I think I was a bit of a party girl, you know? I moved to Manhattan when I was 17 years old, and I immediately started working in nightlife. Like, my first job, it's actually funny, I don't really talk about this job too often. My employees know, and they were like, what? I, like, worked for a club promoter. I was literally their, like, guest list girl. I would collect emails in a bathroom from all these girls and be like, hey, I'm just trying to promote and get you guys out to come to this nightclub on Saturday. Give me your email. And they're like, okay, you're sweet. Like, whatever. Here you go. That's what I did as, like, my first job in nightlife in New York City.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
On a side note, my business partner also used to work in the nightlife world for Brent Bolthouse out in Los Angeles.
See?
So I was like, the hustle is strong.
The energy, especially in New York, of course.
So you were working while you were in school?
So I was working while I was in school, and I would come home like really late, 4 a.m.ers, 5 a.m.ers, and then have to be at class at like 8, 9. Mm. Ultimately, it just wasn't a conducive lifestyle, either one with one another. And I think I really like enjoyed the money aspect and the cash flow aspect of hospitality and nightlife. And, you know, that definitely hindered my learnings and going to school. And I like...
Well, when you're making money...
I was making good money. I was making like $2,000 a week.
That's incredible.
It was like the heyday, like nightlife heyday. I was working for about, I want to say from 18 to about 26.
But so you hustled.
I hustled. I hustled a lot in my early 20s. And
you went back to school.
I went back to school because, you know, I was in nightlife. I was like, I don't think this is my destiny. I don't want to go into management. I don't want to necessarily open up a bar.
Got it.
So I'm like, okay, I have to study something. I have to figure it out, right? I can't just keep kind of partying my way through life, right? So I went back. I basically had to ask them to accept me back. They were like, this is your track record. Why should we let you come back? I'm like, I swear I've changed, blah, blah, blah. Like, give me a chance. And then they did. And then I like dropped out like 6 months later again. And I'm not proud of this by any means, but it just kind of goes to show that I'm much more of a doer. And I've kind of learned to embrace the fact that I don't like the process of education as much as I'd hope. My whole life, I never really did.
It's not for everyone. I mean, something that I've learned along the way with this podcast is probably half of our guests either didn't go to college at all or started college and then started working and then started pursuing other things. So it's not like that's the only path to success, as you are a shining example of.
Oh, well, thank you. So we'll see.
Tell me about that first proper job post-nightlife world.
I did some like little side jobs for friends that had like, you know, small businesses. I'd help them with events, trying to boost up my resume. But no matter how much you try to boost up your resume, as long as you, if you don't have a college education, if you don't have like a fancy brand under your belt, say that you've worked somewhere. I did an internship at Stuart Weitzman when I was in college. I will say that. So that helped me a little bit. But I finally was able to find an internship that gave me a chance.
And what was that?
That was for a company called Third Wave Fashion. It was a brand new business and it doesn't exist anymore, but I'm still really good friends with the founder. I always talk about how she really changed my life and how she gave me the opportunity to really see my full potential because no one else would give me that opportunity. So the company was basically a fashion tech consultancy. She had business experience, she had fashion experience, and she had technology experience. And she realized that there was like this explosion of fashion tech startups kind of coming into the market. So like around the time, like Rent the Runway was probably like brand new, and like Birchbox, all these like really innovative businesses that are thriving now. Those were some of the businesses that she was seeing like starting to pop up more and more and more. So what we did was help fill in the gaps for a lot of these startups. So, you know, some two dudes, you know, they want to start a fashion tech company, but they have no idea.
They've got the tech, not the fashion.
They don't know anything about fashion. So we would help them with that in that sense. And then women that have started fashion business in the past that don't have the technology experience. So we'd help kind of connect them to developers.
Oh, that's so cool.
It was
helping
really
on both
fun.
Sides.
Yeah. So it
connecting was, fashion people with tech and connecting tech people with fashion.
Exactly. So we would connect the dots a lot. We would do a lot of events and meetups so that people can connect themselves. They could hire us for reporting. So like scouring the whole industry and providing insights as to what's happening, trend forecasting in a way, the industry. So I was her first hire as like a small company. I was like, what should I do? Like, what's my role? And she basically let me title myself business and brand manager, brand and business manager, development manager. So I was helping with business development and brand development. So
that's so cool.
Basically what I do now. It was kind of like the ultimate boot camp in entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I can imagine. So what were your day-to-days like?
Day-to-days, you know, anything from writing proposals for brands to then pitching the proposals to meeting with startups that just kind of wanted to pick our brain. Not every startup can afford to pay, you know, consultancy. So we did this really awesome thing where like every Monday we'd meet with entrepreneurs and just kind of give them feedback or answer their questions. So it'd be anything from that to then running our meetups. I was producing pretty much all of them and we
would
do them monthly.
Did you have event production experience?
No. I mean, like I did like a couple of little things for friends, like I said, to
like party planning.
Party planning and like boosting up my resume type gigs, but nothing like this.
How did you know how to plan an event then?
It's the same kind of skill that I didn't realize I had all along, which is just like always being good at connecting the dots intuitively in a freakish kind of way. I always know kind of what's happening around me. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, it's funny, we did this article on the Chill Times about empaths, and I feel like I'm like a crazy empath where I have an energy kind of sensory around me where I like know what needs to be happening or what is happening at all times. And I feel like part of being a good event planner is doing that, being very like
feeling the room.
Feeling the room, being very proactive about what needs to get done. And obviously some people are hyper organized about it too. And I had a little bit of both going on, I'd say.
So how long did you work at that job?
I was there for almost 3 years.
Wow. So you got to learn a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I got to see almost the whole business through. She grew it to about like a 6-person business or so. So it was still fairly small. She downsized the business. And then, you know, I realized it was a great time for me to make like a clean exit and also try to figure out my next step. I'm like, okay, what's this experience? Where does it really place me? I'm kind of, again, it's kind of a vague job. It was a small startup and that I did a lot in, and I didn't have a focus. I didn't know where to go from there. I interviewed at two different places, one of which is Coach and one of which is a development agency. The Coach interview went really well. I got an offer like that same week and I turned it down. And then the other place, the interview was a complete bomb. I tanked the interview. It was for a project management position. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I got this. But they asked me if I knew how to run an Excel sheet. And I was like, yeah, of course. And I never had to in my life. And the dude put me on the spot and asked me to put a formula in for him. Like literally pulled out his laptop. He's like, yep, go ahead, do it. Like truly did not believe that I could do it. And he was right. I was like, you're right. I don't know how to do this. This is not for me. And like basically he was like, all right, cool. We're done. That was such a lesson in like, I don't know if
admit
I can do this. That too. But I don't know if I can be someone's employee. That was kind of that moment for me where I was like, nope, I think I'm going to be an entrepreneur.
So you turned down the Coach job.
Mm-hmm.
This other interview did not go well.
Nope.
So then what did you decide to do next for work?
So there were a few things that I was working on, one of which was an influencer marketing agency. It's funny. I was listening to Jacqueline Johnson's podcast and she had a similar story. It was like kind of in the very, very early stages of Instagram. What would they call like when Instagram would feature you?
Oh, yeah. They were
like featured users or something. So those were the influencers or celebrities. There was no like blogger really being influential on Instagram yet. It was very, very early stage. My then boyfriend, now husband, has always been an entrepreneur too. And so he had an agency fresh out of college, a marketing agency.
Whoa.
My husband and I were like, there's definitely a void in influencers. Like there's definitely something here. Like it's going to happen with Instagram. And we have so many brand connections through like your relationships and like through me working with Third Wave. How do we, you know, procure like our community of like really cool, awesome friends and then kind of pair them up with these potential projects. We worked with brands like Jägermeister and like we did a party with Interview Magazine. And like, so basically what we did is we had this database of cool people. They weren't press and they weren't like these big fancy names that would get invites to all of these parties necessarily.
It was like the next generation of cool girls.
Exactly. So we kind of like sought out these individuals and then the brands would then pay us to invite them out. It was like just party promoting, really, at the end of the day. And we definitely wanted to produce our own events, too, not just be like, oh, here's a database and we'll send out an email, like a la kind of PR. And so we did this kind of like social currency type event.
Oh, amazing.
I think two or three. We did three of them. And so obviously procured the guest list, but then also created these moments inside the event that would then kind of get them to tweet and get them to like, well, there was no Insta stories, but get them mostly to tweet in order to get like a little perk. Like they got to keep a glass or they were entered to win like a huge grand prize with Jaeger. And I hadn't really seen much of that happening. And that was like maybe 5 years ago.
No, so that definitely was very new.
Very, very new. So that agency was cool, but I ended up revisiting this website that I had built up. I had a little blog called Taste of Style when I was 22. And I was like, I'm a fashion girl, but I'm also a food girl. And I love like, you know, telling people where to go. I love recommending places to eat and drink and shop. So I had this little blog. I just basically did like restaurant reviews, downtown NYC spots that I really, really liked. And that's it. And there was no real fashion element, though I was always like, how do I bring fashion in? Like, I had no idea fashion blogging was really a thing. And when Eclective was kind of plateauing, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with it. My husband's like, remember when you had Taste of Style? He's like, what about that? Like, you've always really loved combining these two elements. Like, maybe there's something there. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like, maybe I should revisit that. And so then I did. I ended up relaunching Taste of Style. And that's kind of what I think helped put me on the map a little bit. I think having some sort of platform that I could put my face behind definitely was a good strategy on my end.
Did you have like a content strategy? Did you know from the get-go with the relaunch what you wanted it to be and like what your content was going to be? Or was it an evolution?
A little bit of both, I'd say. I knew that I wanted to introduce fashion. So I was like, okay, I'm going to start incorporating outfits into my, you know, guides. So now I'm going to tell someone to go to this restaurant, but then I'm also going to be like, and this is what I wore. I liked kind of the idea of giving the fashion enthusiasts also an idea of where their kind goes to eat.
Yes.
So totally. I think that was what the positioning was mostly.
To that point, though, there's always like anytime during Fashion Week, there are always like the handful of restaurants that all the fashion girls go to. And there's sort of like the foodie restaurant world of like, you know, the eaters and the infatuations and the New York Times. But then there's also the fashion piece of it.
Yeah.
And the two don't always overlap.
No, not at all.
And sometimes it's like the cool restaurant is not necessarily like the foodie restaurant.
Yeah.
And that's okay, too. But there's a very distinct, like, there are very distinct stomping grounds for cool girls.
For sure. For sure.
And people have not been very good about being able to articulate that.
Yeah, articulate it or talk about the two in a way that it feels like, you know, genuine and... I think we definitely did something really nice there combining the two. But it always remained really tiny. And like, I kind of just figured it all out. I'm like, okay, now I can start monetizing. Like, brands want to pay me to promote their products. Okay, cool. It was a nice little lesson in also like, you know, native advertising and branded content creation, which has served me very well throughout my life. Ever since.
So you're working on the blog.
Yeah.
What else are you doing at that same time? Because knowing you, you probably have another like three hustles going on.
Oh, yeah. I had to. I was like, what am I going to do for money? It was obviously a very long journey to actually start monetizing both of those businesses. I would run out of money all the time. Luckily, I had Adam, my husband, then partner, was very supportive. And around the same time that I had kind of Taste of Style evolving, figuring it out, it was about a four-year-old site or so. He was also working on a bar concept with his business partners. You know, he comes to me, I go to him for a lot of opinions. Like
you have a great working relationship.
Great working relationship. We feed off of each other a lot. So that was a time where I was like, how can I help you? You know, I never asked to really help him all that much with the marketing agency, but I was like, I want to do this. Like, I want to help you guys. Like, I could be the female voice to this project. And then I basically helped them with their social strategy, coming up with kind of like this brand identity for them. And then also, of course, helping navigate the press process, influencer process, all that, the stuff that I thought I was good at. And also with like, you know, cocktail tastings and like making sure that everything felt on par with our brand and really could like stand out in the very, very saturated hospitality market.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did the idea about Chill House start?
So Chill House is a 360 destination for modern self-care. The brand really started with a physical location in the Lower East Side, actually not too far from where we're filming or we're podcasting right now. And that space as it exists is a wellness cafe, a nail art studio, and a massage boutique. So it's kind of this three-in-one cafe spa hybrid. We've evolved ever since. We actually just launched e-commerce mid-September.
Yes.
But the concept really started because my husband and I were trying to get massages one day, and we realized our options were super kind of like far apart from one another. It was either like Chinatown, seedy, cheap pricing, almost feels unethical, and then like high end. There was nothing really in the middle, and no place that really spoke to me to kind of visit for relaxation and that downtime. So we talked about how there was something definitely missing in the market and, you know, like kind of went through our options. Okay, do we do like a traditional spa? Like what else is missing? And I was like, well, I think it's kind of crazy that guys have a hospitality element with their grooming, like blind barber and then there's three-seat espresso. Why isn't there like a manicure spot with a, you know, with a cafe? Like why don't we have that option? So that's kind of how it all came together. And the three work harmoniously really nicely because I think relaxation does start with a drink in hand, whether that's a cocktail or whether that's a coffee or a chamomile tea, whatever it is, it's like you're settling into your relaxation, right? It's the first
like
thing you do.
Initial signifier.
Exactly. And the manicures really came in because that's how I practice self-care weekly. Like I get a manicure every week for the past, I don't know, 15 plus years. And then obviously massage was kind of how it started. So this trifecta really felt like the perfect way for women to experience a nice moment for themselves.
Got it. So did you find the location first? Did you know anything about, I mean, like you need licenses for a lot of this stuff. Like,
yeah.
Did you know how to put all of that together?
I know.
Because it seems like I mean, the concept is brilliant, no question.
Thank you.
But going from concept to fruition seems like a very steep mountain. So how did you climb that?
It's a very, very steep mountain. I mean, we hired a lot of consultants, I'd say. That was number one. But the location actually came after we realized what the services would be and the layout should look like based on those services. So we definitely poked around a lot of spaces, all mostly downtown. And we had a budget in mind. And so that's kind of where we ended up. Was with this, like, you know, rent that we felt comfortable with. So that's why we're in the Lower East Side and because we felt that our customers already are there. But as far as licensing and all that goes, I mean, I leaned on my husband a ton, of course, because he did have the bars. At the time that we opened, it's been about a year and a half now, we've already opened about 3 or 4 properties. So I leaned on my guys, you know, I think it's okay. I'm like, I'm honest about that. Like, totally. I haven't done it all myself. And there's definitely, we've definitely messed up in a couple of ways.
Like what?
I'd say one of my biggest mistakes with the business is like not going to the DOH first, assuming that they'd be okay with a cafe and the nails being so close together without any walls or barriers between the two, separation between the two.
And what is the DOH for our audience who doesn't know?
Department of Health.
They were annoyed about that?
Yeah, they came by because obviously we applied for a food license. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they came because they're supposed to do their inspections. And then they saw that we had this cafe and they were like, nope, shut down. There's nothing that says that it's illegal. They just can choose to not like it. We have this like amazing ventilation system and we spend a lot of money on it. We're like, okay, we have these elements, but like, no, they shut us down.
So how did you navigate that?
Basically just negotiated with them. We're like, you know, $20,000 later, like, and for 3 months of not having that cafe open too. Ooh. So like really, you know,
scary.
Hindered the business. Like we had to put a lot of our own money into the business because we just simply couldn't
do
finance.
Anything.
We couldn't pay the rent.
It
like truly scared me. I was like, are we going to have to change up our entire business model because the DOH decided to do this to us? That was the whole concept, cafe with nails. Yeah. and massage, like that doesn't exist. And are we gonna have to turn this into a retail space? Like, what do we do? And so it was a lot of scrambling to make that area
compliant.
Yeah. And eventually, yes, they finally let us reopen and all's fine now. But right. That was a big lesson. And like, no, just like maybe go to them first and find out if it's okay.
So now we know. How did launch go? And also, like, the aesthetic of it is so beautiful and
Thank
so
you.
Well done. Who handled that?
We have an amazing architect and designer. His name is Jeffrey White. And, you know, we gave him as much inspo as possible. I've never built out a space. And I now I know a lot more about architecture than I did going into it. But I didn't know the first thing about architecture. So it was really just about showing him as much inspiration as possible. We really wanted to be thoughtful about our branding. We hired an amazing agency called Combo, and they killed it for us. And I think just going through that process really helped us kind of narrow in on what the brand was going to be ultimately. And we really haven't veered off too much from the brand principles since day one. I mean, they're evolving, but they're, you know, it's nice to have that like style guide and that brand Bible in a way to kind of always refer to and kind of keep you on track.
So how do you know what direction to expand in? So like you guys just started selling merch. How did you know it was the right time to do that? How did you know they were the right products to sell?
Well, merch, so the shirt that I'm wearing now, don't tell me to relax. Our team's been wearing it for the past several months. So we've always had a bit of a request for merch. That was natural. That was obvious. Product extension. So we have started playing around with our own. We have blends that we make in-house right now to power our cafe. These like wellness blends, adaptogenic blends. We've started playing around with the idea of doing our own kind of branded product. And that was our first test. And we realized that people were really excited about shopping the things that we were carrying. And so we had like a little retail wall and I curated all the brands of some of my favorites, like anything from candles. And we lit the candles there. So people would like be like, I want that scent. Great. You know,
yeah.
If you make a space aspirational, people are going to want to shop the things that are in that space. So that became more and more obvious. And, you know, growth happens when you least expect it. Actually, I want to say Sophia Maruso is probably the first person that reached out that like really helped kind of put us on the map and realize that this is actually a bigger business than we thought it was going to be. She literally slid into my DM. I'm not kidding. And was like, I love what you're doing. And I want to be a part of it. How can I be a part of it? And I flew out to LA. I went to her home. And then she became an advisor and introduced us to like every VC in the Valley and New York and LA. And it like got us thinking just like, what's next? And I think we were a little early stage to have those conversations mm-hmm. with these people. But
it's still good to have
Still good to have those relationships. So I really credit her for helping us kind of like that kick in the ass that we needed to grow.
To dream even bigger.
Exactly. I still had Taste of Style.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't know what to do with it. A combination of her kind of telling us, like, it's go time. Okay, I guess it is. And then additionally, figuring out what to do with Taste of Style really kind of guided us into the next kind of phase of our journey, which was the first step was editorial. Mm-hmm. And so Taste of Style then, you know, I was like trying to sell it, kind of. I was like throwing it out there to a few people and like nothing was really sticking. I was like, do I really want to spend all this time like putting together a plan for TTS and trying to sell it for what, maybe like $40,000, $50,000, like nothing, because it was such a small site. Or I gifted to Chill House and it's now part of our business. So that's what we did. And so we rebranded and redirected all the traffic, and it's now called The Chill Times. And we kept our editorial manager at the time. She's now our editorial director now, and brought on some of the same contributors, kept some of the same kind of photographers in the family, brought them over to help us out with The Chill Times.
Oh, that's amazing. So do you have plans for expansion with The Chill Times, or do you think it's going to go as is for a minute?
It's an important part of our overall business. We were realizing that we had a lot of brand partnership traction. There was obviously an opportunity to bring these brands through a 360 experience with our customers. Mm-hmm. So branded content, of course, is our obviously the revenue model for the content arm of it.
And it's just a new revenue stream then.
Exactly.
Which is great.
And then now it's an even more important part because now we're blending content and commerce.
Which is the way of the future.
Yes.
So speaking of that, to some degree, we talk about money a fair mm-hmm. amount on this podcast, because I think that it's important for people to like really understand some of the things that people have gone through as they've built their businesses. When you were first starting your company, did you feel comfortable with the financial aspect, or was that something that you were less hands-on with? Like how did you deal with it?
Money has never been like my strongest suit. Math was probably one of my least favorite subjects in school. Again, I had my husband to kind of aid that side. We actually raised on a unit level finance to start. We didn't know that we were going to turn into this kind of like more multi-pillared brand. So that's how we raised. And I really leaned on him and his business partner to reach out to all of our existing investors from the other properties to do the fundraise.
And then as the company has expanded and changed and evolved, have you had to change your financial strategy? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's so interesting that you're saying already, just from the get-go, you already have this additional revenue stream yeah. from branded content and being able to monetize the Chill Times. You have another from product as well as the actual property itself. Right. So were you planning for all of that, or have you sort of like had to adapt as you go along?
We were definitely not planning for any of it, you know. Like I said, we raised on a single unit, and that's kind of how the fundraise went. And our investors are currently like converting over to the brand right now because we had to form an LLC for the major brand. So we are still kind of in the middle of figuring it all out and how it all works together. But for example, we just did a big partnership with C&D, and they did an activation in the space for the whole week during Fashion Week, and it was amazing. And then we also did an amazing editorial for them on the Chill Times. So there's this like 360 partnership
yep.
where we have like our 149 employees that need to get paid out by that one single unit. And then we also have this you know, paycheck that we then have to kind of like split off and then give it to 149. And then same thing with e-com. We're going to basically do these like draft orders from the brick and mortar to e-com. And that way unit can now purchase from the LLC to sell all those products in store. So it's been a huge learning experience. And again, it's like we're still kind of like in the middle of all of it. Like the third pillar just launched. But so I think by the end of the year, we'll have our groove kind of
figured out a little bit.
Yeah.
One thing that we were talking about last night is sort of this idea of financial wellness, about that sort of like we put so much emphasis on self-care, understandably so. Mm-hmm. We put so much emphasis on being like emotionally, you know, in a place of wellness. What does financial wellness mean to you?
I think it just means having a healthy relationship with your finances, being comfortable with them, knowing that it's going to go through ebbs and flows, and like being okay with that whole process.
Which is scary.
It's so scary. My husband likes to joke that I'm kind of like scared of it. Like I don't always love looking at the bank account. I'm more focused on making money than I am about managing my money. Uh-huh. And I lean on him a ton to manage our finances. And that's kind of how we've split off our roles. I'm more like, okay, I'm brand development, brand and business development. You're more like finance management, mm-hmm. and making sure that our budgets are staying intact. And I'm like trying to like build a dream. And he's like trying to manage the dream, you know? And it helps to have someone that can guide you through that and like makes it a lot easier for you to not always have to be stressed out about the budgets necessarily, but like continue kind of pushing forward. We as individuals go through very different stages of our relationship with money. And for me right now, I'm in a good, I think, relationship with it. I've like don't have any debt, which is amazing.
Hey,
personally, I don't think the business has much debt either, and we don't.
Congratulations, though.
I know. But I've always kind of been that way throughout my life. I like have a lot of money, and then I have to pay off one big debt, and then I'm like, okay,
now I'm broke again,
and then, and I'm hoping that I have, you know, only a healthy financial future ahead of me.
We also don't talk about it. Like people don't talk about money or how they feel about money or how they spend money or like what level of debt people are comfortable with.
Yeah.
It's like some people it's zero, some people it's a lot. Like my business partner, bless her, she is much riskier than I am. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if part of the reason I'm as conservative as I am and as afraid of risk is because she's much more comfortable with it. Right. So I feel like I have to be like, no, but wait, what about this?
Right. I think it's important to have a little bit of both, right? One's totally a dreamer, one's a manager.
Yeah. She's like, we'll figure it out. Meanwhile, right. I'm like, but what about this? So, right. But I wasn't always like that. It's also interesting because I think that your financial relationship sort of depends on who you're working with.
Oh, 1,000,000%. And I always feel so bad for people that are doing it alone. Like my poor mother, I've been watching her being the best salesperson in the world, but then also like managing her own finances. So like she kind of does both. And so I sympathize. Someone that has to take it all in, you know?
Which feels like a lot to me too.
Yeah.
So how important do you think financial literacy is? Like how important is it for you? Do you feel like you still need to learn things?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I do.
I mean, I'd advise any young woman to start early. Like I wish I'd known a lot more. I wish I could run a fundraising conversation with a VC without my husband there. Like I still don't feel 100% comfortable like getting into the nitty gritty of the finances. It's just not in my vocabulary as well as it is with someone like him who has gone to school for it, you know. So if there's one kind of like piece of advice that I'd have for someone that's like fundraising and all that, 100% like know your shit. And I'm still like, and if you don't know your shit, then like have someone there who does. And obviously like you stay in your lane with like what your position is in that business. And then they stay in that lane. But learn and know as much as you can so you can answer the questions, of course, when they're not around. So that's as far as I, like, that's how advanced I am. Like, I know like the important questions, but I don't know like the nitty gritty.
But I like that you know what you know and you also know what you don't know.
Of course.
And that's important. Not everyone knows that.
Yep.
So one of the things that we always talk about on this podcast is there are a lot of our listeners out there who might be doing one thing in their careers and maybe it's going really well, but it just doesn't really speak to them. And they have this dream inside them and they want to switch careers or they want to switch lanes or they want to evolve in a different career path. What advice would you give someone who wants to do something different, but is feeling a little stuck?
It's funny. There are a lot of quotes about comfort. I think it was something along the lines of like, comfort is the enemy of progress.
Yes.
I think that's something like that. that really resonated with me, right? Like, I was comfortable for so many years making all this money and like not taking any risks. And I will say that if you don't take risks, there are no real rewards. And I loved the Prudential event yesterday. That little one fact about 2030, they're projecting 50% or more
of the people in the U.S. self-employed.
Will be self-employed. That's amazing.
Which is crazy.
It's so crazy to me.
But it also really speaks to me, that's like the ultimate American dream.
Oh, for
it's
sure.
Like, not only like I'm going to build my own business and I'm going to do it myself. And at the same time, I'm also like, oh, that's so scary. I don't recommend it to everyone.
Not to everyone. Right. And like, I can understand why people also, you know, are corporate employees and like stability and, you know, think of their family and their future. I've just never been that way.
So what is something that you're working on now? What is like your next big project or something that we can look forward to?
We are in very early stages of starting to do our own products.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And I can't say what they are yet. But yeah, we are definitely going in that route. We want to be a product-centric brand and cool. You'll hopefully start seeing some of the products that we sell online in store. And so really bringing all the experiences together in one.
Okay, so my last question is always my favorite question. If you could take a time machine and go back in time and speak with your younger self, what advice would you give her?
I would probably say pay attention in school.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think it's kind of like funny and novel to some people that I like dropped out twice. But to me, I mean, again, yes, like I know that I am where I am, like I said, because of all the consequences of my life. But yeah, I wish I was more knowledgeable in certain things. And it's really hard for me to now step back and be like, oh, I'm going to go to school. I'm going to graduate. You know, when do I actually ever get that, like that little moment in for myself? Who knows? Maybe when I am like 50 something, I'll be like, I'm going to go back to college. So yeah, I would say I would have just focus, be more attentive. And, you know, it's okay to, it's cool to like learn.
That was the co-founder and CEO of Chill House, Cindy Ramirez-Fulton. If you like today's show, please, 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 please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to rate and review us. We always love seeing you spread the word on social. And now you can tag us in your posts. We are at Second Life Pod on Twitter and Instagram. You can direct message us. I'm at Hillary Kerr on Instagram, or you can hit up at Second Life Pod. So many options. Let us know what you're thinking. I'm Hillary Kerr, and you've been listening to Second Life.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.